The House will be in order. The Chair recognizes the gentleman from Harrison, Representative Windschuttle, for an introduction.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Good afternoon, Mr. Speaker. Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen of the House. I'd just like to give a brief introduction and a thank you to all the folks that are in the gallery here today. All you freedom-loving Iowans, we're glad to have you, and welcome to the Iowa House. So thank you for being here today.
Introduction to bills.
House File 2577 by Running Marquardt and others, a bill for an act establishing a loan repayment program and fund for established for eligible individuals in high demand jobs, including certified nurses' aide, child care workers, direct care workers, and to be administered by the State College Aid Commission and making appropriations.
First reading bill is in order for committee and amendment referred to the Committee on Appropriations.
House File 2578 by Running Marquardt and others, a bill for an act establishing a small business revolving loan program and small business revolving loan fund within the Economic Development Authority to award low interest loans to establishing small businesses.
First reading bill is in order for committee and amendment referred to Committee on Appropriations.
House File 2579 by Pritchard and others, a bill for an act related to the treatment of adoptive parent employees and making penalties applicable.
First reading bill is in order for committee and amendment referred to Committee on Labor.
House File 2580 by Committee on State Government, a bill for an act regarding port authorities, including by allowing port authorities to enter into certain loan agreements and lease contracts.
First reading bill is in order for commitment or amendment referred to Committee on Ways and Means.
House File 2581 by Committee on Public Safety, a bill for an act relating to regulation of hemp, including by providing for testing methods and regulation of hemp products, providing penalties and making penalties applicable, and including effective date provisions.
First reading bill is in order for commitment amendment placed on calendar.
House File 2582 by Committee on State Government, a bill for an act relating to the practice of interior design and providing penalties and including effective date provisions.
First reading bill is in order for commitment amendment placed on calendar.
House File 2583 by Committee on Judiciary, a bill for an act related to court-ordered reimbursement of jail costs and restitution.
First reading bill is in order for commitment amendment placed on calendar.
House File 2584 by Committee on Public Safety, a bill for an act related to peace officer and public safety and emergency personnel bill of rights provided for employee assessment of supervisors of certain state officers and including effective date provisions.
First reading bill is in order for commitment amendment placed on calendar.
House File 2585 by Committee on State Government, a bill for an act related to terminology used in relation to the deaf and hard of hearing persons.
First reading bill is in order for commitment amendment placed on calendar.
Senate File 2153 by Committee on Education, a bill for an act relating to the administration of physical exams and health student screenings by school districts.
First reading bill is in order for commitment amendment referred to the Committee on Education.
Senate File 2195 by Committee on Local Government, a bill for an act providing for an exemption to the Iowa State Elevator Code for certain multi-story commercial buildings in specific circumstances.
First reading of the bill is in order for commitment amendment passed on file. Chair recognizes the gentleman from Harrison, Representative Windschuttle.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Good afternoon, Mr. Speaker. Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen of the House. Mr. Speaker, at this time, please recognize Representative Holt for House File 2502, Representative Kaufman for House File 2477, and Representative Kaufman again for House File 2512.
The Chair recognizes the gentleman from Crawford, Representative Holt, for opening remarks on House File 2502.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Good afternoon, guests in the gallery. House File 2502 is a bill relating to firearms and weapons, including the storage, carrying, possession, or transportation of weapons, and the establishment, use, and maintenance of shooting ranges. The bill would prohibit a commission, a county board of supervisors, or a city council from creating conditions that exceed or are more stringent than state law on the establishment, use, or maintenance of a shooting range. Current law prohibits political subdivisions from having any ordinance that regulates the ownership, possession, legal transfer, lawful transportation, registration, or licensing of firearms when those things are otherwise lawful. This bill extends the prohibition to modifications, firearm attachments, and other weapons. Additionally, if a political subdivision is sued for violating the law and the plaintiff wins, they can recover all damages attributed to the violation, and a court shall award the winning party reasonable attorney fees and court costs. The bill provides that political subdivisions may restrict the carrying, possession, or transportation of firearms or other dangerous weapons into a building or physical structure if arrangements are made for screening and armed security personnel. The bill prohibits a political subdivision from enacting ordinances, motions, resolutions, or amendments regulating the storage of weapons and ammunition, and any currently existing ordinance, motion, resolution, or amendment existing on or after July 1st, 2020 is void. This bill does not prevent a political subdivision from regulating the storage of explosive materials consistent with Code Chapter 101A. Finally, the bill provides that any Supreme Court or judicial branch order that prohibits a person from carrying, possessing, or transporting a weapon in a county courthouse or other joint-use public facility shall be unenforceable unless the order applies only to a courtroom, court office, or to a courthouse used only for judicial branch functions. Mr. Speaker, there is an amendment.
There is an amendment. Will the clerk call up the amendment?
H8038 by Holt of Crawford.
The chair recognizes the gentleman from Crawford, Representative Holt, for amendment, for opening remarks on amendment H8038.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Amendment 8038 is a perfecting amendment that corrects disparities, inconsistencies by making the language in sections 414.26, sections 2 and 5 identical as it pertains to the methods that political subdivisions shall not use in enacting policies that go beyond state law. This concludes my opening remarks.
Is there discussion? The chair recognizes the lady from Clinton, Representative Wolf.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Good afternoon, guests up in the galleries is what we call those. So I rise in opposition to Amendment 8038. In 1990, the Iowa General Assembly enacted Code Section 724.28, the primary code section we're dealing with both in this bill and in this amendment, which preempted the legal authority of local governments to pass ordinances, and an ordinance is just a fancy word for a law. So preempted local governments from passing ordinances that regulate various aspects of firearm possession and ownership, and specifically that are inconsistent with state laws that regulate various aspects of firearm possession and ownership. Preempting local governments from passing local laws that are inconsistent with state laws is a proper use of the preemption powers vested in the General Assembly, vested in us by our state constitution. What this amendment proposes far exceeds that preemption authority. Under the bill as amended, it would be illegal for a local government to enact policy that is inconsistent with state laws. Policies are not laws. Policies are not ordinances. A person who violates a policy cannot be jailed, cannot be fined. Policies reflect the values of a local government, and more specifically, the values of the citizens that the members of the local government represent. Again, they are not laws, they are not regulations, they have no legal binding authority on their constituents. The fact that a majority of this body might disagree with some policies enacted by some cities or counties is irrelevant. We have the legal authority under our Constitution to preempt local laws and to impose our state laws on those local governments and on those local citizens, regardless of whether or not they like it or whether or not they feel that those are good laws. We do not have the constitutional authority, and I would suggest we do not have the moral authority to impose the values of, whether it's a majority of this chamber or not, the values of any of us on our local governments and on their constituents. The minute a local government passes any type of a law, and I would agree that one thing this amendment does is it adds resolutions and a few other things to the list of things that a local government can't do. Well, a resolution could have the power of law. Policy does not. Putting into code language that preempts local governments from creating and formulating their own policy, their own value, their own values based on the input from their constituents is far beyond the scope of our legal authority. It is micromanaging at the extreme. It is a huge government overreach. And I would think that every member of this body would reject that type of state attempt at mind control. We have a lot of authority here. We can stop local governments from passing laws we don't like, and we do it every single day, and I think we're going to do it again in at least one and maybe two more bills today. And that is our job. And if I don't always agree with the laws that you attempt to get rid of, well, you're in the majority, or the majority of this body, you have that right. But you do not have the right to prescribe to local governments what they should believe, what they should value, what policies that they should develop. So because this amendment puts policy preemption, I am sure for the first time ever, into the Iowa Code, I will be a no on this amendment, and I will have to be a no on the bill. Thank you.
Is there further discussion? Seeing none, the chair recognizes Representative Holt for closing remarks on H8038.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And I am glad that Representative Wolf agrees we can preempt ordinances of political subdivisions as it relates to these issues. This language is necessary to cover all bases to ensure that a city or a county does not attempt to circumvent the state law by calling it by a different name. And I would imagine that citizens may not realize that a policy does not have the force of law, and that is why it is necessary to get just a little more specific on the language based upon what we've seen. Mr. Speaker, I move the amendment.
Representative Holt moves Amendment H8038. All those in favor shall say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say no. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it, and the amendment is adopted. We are now back on HF 2502 as amended. Is there further discussion? The chair recognizes the lady from Wapello, Representative Gaskell.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, members of the House, and guests. As state representatives, our first priority is and should always be the safety and welfare of our constituents. And as a legislative body, we also believe that in general, local control is preferred over dictates made by the state. I'm afraid House File 2502 presents a safety concern for Iowans and at the same time takes away local control from officials who know what's best in the interest of their communities. As a former county auditor, one of my many responsibilities was the overall security of the courthouse and county offices. I would coordinate safety measures with my county board of supervisors, as well as local law enforcement officials, specifically the county sheriff's office. But House File 2502 takes that authority away, thus a direct impact on local control. Something both sides of the aisle have argued over the years as many as being something that is paramount in the day-to-day operation of cities and counties. I worry about the consequences of having additional weapons in the courthouses. For example, when it's tax season and county treasurers are dealing with large amounts of receipts or cash on hand, and even with possible exemptions to this proposal, financial burdens on local entities could be problematic. With the addition of metal detectors and armed security, few entities in this state are flush with cash to pay for these measures. Mr. Speaker, and to my colleagues, House File 2502, I fear, sets a bad precedent in taking away and or diminishing local control. I will be voting no on this bill, and I hope you will as well.
Chair recognizes the gentleman from Woodbury, Representative Cassina.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen in the House.
I rise today in opposition of House File 2502 for the very reason that this bill will once again step on our rights to local control. Whether it be a township, a county, large city, citizens go to the voting booth to elect the leaders of their choice. Those elected to office have the responsibility of keeping the citizens safe. Through ordinance passed at the local level that serve the individual situations, House File 2502 takes all that away. It should be up to the local administrators to make policy for their community and not the state. This statewide mandate is an assault on local control, and it is an insult to our local elected officials. One size does not fit all when it comes to public safety. We have to understand that. Excuse me. The state should not make local authorities bend to the will if they believe that that makes their community less safe. Public and private employers should have the ability to make decisions that they believe will make their employees safe. This bill does just the opposite. Please stand with your community knowing that those officials know what is best for their citizens. Thank you very much. Please vote no on HF 2502.
Chair recognizes the gentleman from Jasper, Representative Breckenridge.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, ladies and gentlemen of the House. First off, I'd like to thank everyone that has come here today to discuss this important issue. For those in the gallery that may not know my background, retired law enforcement, 27 years. I'm also concealed carry, and I do carry around my community and my state. Having said that, when this bill came forward, I reached out to our Board of Supervisors and our auditor, met with them in person all together to discuss this specific piece of legislation to get their input. I was wanting to defer to them to see what their thoughts and their input would be on such legislation. I took a copy of that piece of legislation and met with them, and as we discussed it and they looked at it, their main impetus or concern was it's another unfunded mandate that's come forward where the state is trying to put control or take control of what they do. They viewed themselves as duly elected officials responsible for their county and for those political subdivision facilities and buildings. It was about the local control that really caused them the most heartache. I also reached out to several mayors within Jasper County and got similar response that it was truly the more local control. Some of the things that we deal with that we don't realize we're doing at the state are some of the unfunded mandates and demands that we're putting on our counties and cities, whether it's the property tax for the mental health levies, whether it's what the sheriff's office has to pay for medical expenses for inmates. All of those things cost dollars. And they see this moving forward as a potential to be a cost and something that could potentially raise property tax if they're asked and act to step up and pay for this. Now, some may say that in this case, simply let the weapons in, and then they don't have to have armed security or screening devices there. The challenge that they face and the concerns that they've expressed with me come from the fact that you're absolutely right when it comes to the courthouse, but one of the concerns we have is they still are responsible for the building, and if the judicial branch comes to them and says, we demand security for these rooms, again, it's their facility. Their fear is this is unintended consequences. It's still going to cost them to have to hire somebody and secure that based on what the judicial branch is requesting of them. I think the one Board of Supervisor I visited with even this morning at 10:30 this morning was concerned enough that that person reached out to the sheriff to ask what it would cost if that played out the way that they believe it could. And they said it'd be about $150,000 to $172,000 for Jasper County to have that armed security and screening. I back up just a second. Just the armed security personnel. That did not count the screening. So I think statewide, the County Board of Supervisors really probably are open to having this discussion and looking for pathways forward, but feel that this pressure in the local control issue and not thinking through the unintended consequences, what that could cost them and their taxpayers who are already strapped, especially in small counties, that's the fear they have. Again, I look at them and I respect all of them as duly elected officials to make the decisions for their counties. I'm also a concealed carry permit holder and want to be able to carry my weapon everywhere that I can. But I also recognize their responsibility and their importance to make sure we look for any unintended consequences or impacts by the legislation that's passed. So I think we need to think and say, is there something we can do as a legislative body, as this bill, which I assume it will pass this chamber, goes to the Senate, that we can work with the Association of Supervisors and the judicial branch to find some resolution so that there may be funding or at least that responsibility put on the right individuals based on who's requesting that security. So again, as we move forward, I hope we can have those conversations, Representative Holt, as we move forward and go over to the Senate side. I understand the impetus behind this. I think we just want to make sure we look at all the unintended consequences and potential cost to the taxpayers that could be in place based on the conversations I've had with my Board of Supervisors. Thank you.
Chair recognizes the lady from Story, Representative Wessel Crochelle.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen of the House. The constitutional right to own a firearm comes with important responsibilities regarding community safety and therefore must come with conditions. Just as the First Amendment rights come with conditions, our communities need tools to assure public safety. Under this bill, cities and counties are allowed to ban weapons in public buildings if they have a metal detector and an armed guard. If they do not provide these expensive protections, all firearms, attachments, modifications, or other weapons would be allowed in any government building that is considered a political subdivision. None of them would be able to ban weapons without significant taxpayer dollars to pay for metal detectors and armed guards. Many of these buildings have more than one door. This is an irresponsible use of taxpayer dollars. My county has a metal detector in our courthouse for the judicial branch only. However, my county can't afford to staff that. The estimated cost for staffing that in Story County, just the judicial branch, is $410,000 a year. We don't have an armed guard. Counties are begging us for revenue every day for mental health services for both adult and children programs. And now we are saying to counties they need to balance this expensive public safety with funding for mental health services. Let's talk about what firearms, attachments, modifications, or other weapons we might find in these government and public buildings. An AR-15? A large capacity magazine? A grenade? What about a trigger activator? I can't find a definition for other weapon. Is my imagination running wild? Or is it possible that this bill would allow all of these weapons into our public buildings? Let's think about the kinds of buildings these firearms, modifications, and firearm attachments or other weapons might be found in. Public libraries, public hospitals. My hometown has a city-owned hospital. My county has a county-owned hospital. People get a lot of bad news in hospitals. We are very emotional when we're in hospitals, and we aren't making, or we don't have the best capacity to make good decisions. Is this really where we want to see firearms, firearm attachments, modifications, or other weapons? There are approximately 60 public-owned hospitals in the state. Where else could we be finding these weapons? Mental health regions? County mental health facilities? Dubuque has a public nursing home. How about our parks and recreation and our gyms? Local laws address issues and dangers facing each individual community and county. Let's talk about the right to carry versus individual safety. I'm concerned about careless gun handling. I'm concerned about the possibility of negligent discharge of a firearm in the labor and delivery unit of my local city hospital. I'm concerned about careless gun handling in the children's section of the public library during story time. No credible statistical evidence exists to show that permissive concealed weapons laws reduce crime. 9 out of 10 Americans oppose laws allowing guns on college campuses, in bars, in restaurants, stadiums, hospitals, or government buildings. Recently, we've taken away the rights of local governments to raise the minimum wage. We've restrict the use of such things as plastic bags. We've reduced local governments' ability to create rental controls. We passed out of judiciary ban the box. And today, we are expanding our restrictions on local government by restricting what they can do with weapons. Local officials are the experts on public safety in their communities. It is clear to me that we need to leave these decisions up to our local city councils and county board of supervisors. In committee, Representative Holt said it is inconvenient to leave your weapons at home when visiting a government building. Now, is it really inconvenient to leave your rifle tripod at home or your trigger activator at home? My answer to that, Representative Holt, is I am sorry for your inconvenience, but I believe that public safety and local control trumps carrying an AR-15 into your local hospital. Again, the constitutional right to own a firearm comes with important responsibilities regarding community safety, and therefore it must come with conditions. Our communities need tools to assure public safety. This bill goes against the wishes of the voters. I recommend a no vote. Thank you.
Seeing no further discussion, the chair recognizes the gentleman from Crawford, Representative Holt, for closing remarks on HF 2502.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Let me address a few of the things that were stated on the floor before I go to my closing remarks. Representative Wolf, the word policy is already in code 724.28, so it's not unprecedented, it's already there. Representative Breckenridge, I certainly appreciate your concerns, the concerns you heard from your county folks. I'll address some of those in just a minute. Representative Russell Crichel, a couple of things. This doesn't cover grenades, Representative Russell Crichel. That's a little bit of fear-mongering, I think. 724.1 regulates grenades. Grenades are not legal, and they're not covered under this bill. The federal government also regulates grenades, so we're not talking about grenades in this legislation. Also, you mentioned trigger activator. I think you may be referring to a bump stock, which is illegal under federal law, and it's not allowed to be sold under state law, so I think we got that one covered. So again, folks, anyone listening out there, This doesn't cover grenades, because grenades, bombs, stuff like that are illegal under federal law, and they're illegal under Iowa Code 724.1. Let's talk a little bit about local control. I know Representative Gaskell, Representative Cassina, Representative Breckenridge brought local control up. Cost was also mentioned, so let's talk a little bit about those things. Local control is an important principle, but there are also areas of law and regulation that logically must be on the state level. Somebody mentioned minimum wage. That's logically got to be on the state level. Another one is the area of firearms. Let's face it, a patchwork of county and city ordinances would be eminently confusing and extremely difficult for our citizens. Now let's talk about excessive cost for screening and armed security. I understand this concern, but I believe this requirement is essential in ensuring the security of citizens. The political subdivision has chosen to disarm. If a city or county government truly wants security and safety for their citizens, they have two options. Number one, don't disarm citizens and think that a sign on the wall makes them safer. Number two, instead of a sign which will only disarm law-abiding citizens and create a shooting gallery for a sick individual to take advantage of innocent unarmed citizens, provide screening and armed security. Either of these options is real safety, not false safety based on a sign that actually makes people less safe, I would argue. A little bit more about expense and some of the things that have been said here. Let's bear in mind, we added modifications and accessories today. Gun-free zones have been illegal in Iowa since April 5th, 1990, under Section 724.28. The law was made stronger in 2017, and many in this body supported creating standing to sue for relief for those affected by an ordinance or policy enacted that exceeds state law. There is also this statement in 724.7, non-professional permit to carry weapons, quote, all permits so issued shall be for a period of 5 years and shall be valid throughout the state except where the possession or carrying of a firearm is prohibited by state or federal law. So since April 5th, 1990, it has been illegal for a political subdivision to make firearms illegal in a building. And not sure we've had a lot of issues since April 5th, 1990, when law-abiding citizens exercising their Second Amendment rights have been carrying. There are several reasons this bill is needed. I've talked about some of them, we'll go over them again. First of all, it is clear that a patchwork of ordinances and regulations varying from county to county or even city to city within a county would make it nearly impossible for law-abiding citizens exercising their Second Amendment rights to know if they are legal or not as they travel about the state. This principle applies not only to firearms, it applies to accessories and modifications that they may have made to their weapons, transportation and storage of weapons and ammunition. A patchwork of differing requirements would be an infringement on the Second Amendment rights of our citizens. Preemption is also necessary as it pertains to regulating gun ranges. Political motivations by those hostile to Second Amendment rights cannot be allowed to prevent a gun range from opening or being improved. If a political subdivision decides to restrict the Second Amendment rights of its citizens in a particular building or structure, then most certainly it should be incumbent upon them to ensure compliance and provide security, since that political subdivision has removed a major portion of the right of self-defense for those entering that restricted area. I would argue this is a moral obligation, since the political subdivision has denied a God-given right, and it should be a legal responsibility as well. House File 2502 makes it so. The same principle applies to multiple-use courthouses in which there are many functions beyond the judicial branch. Let's talk a little bit more about gun-free zones. I have never understood why someone believes that a gun-free zone will make them safer. In reality, a gun-free zone without screening and security will never stop a sick individual from killing innocent people. It will stop the law-abiding citizen from carrying protection. It is illegal to kill people, but that does not stop shootings. It is illogical to conclude that a sign announcing a gun-free zone absent screening and security will do anything besides encourage sick individuals into believing they have a shooting gallery of unarmed citizens to choose from. Dateline CNN, December 30th, 2019. The headline reads, quote, man shoots and kills two inside a Texas church before parishioners fatally shoot him, unquote. It is not about the gun, it is about the character of the person holding the gun. A firearm can be used for good or it can be used for evil. In Texas, a firearm was used for evil at the West Freeway Church of Christ to kill two people. A firearm was then used for good when the church's security team shot and killed the shooter. The good Lord only knows how many people worshiping on a Sunday morning in Texas would have died in that church had a well-trained citizen not exercised his Second Amendment rights to keep and bear arms, and thank goodness it wasn't a gun-free zone. Police Chief J.P. Bevering said at the time, quote, there was a security team inside the church and they eliminated the threat, unquote. I don't think a sign announcing a gun-free zone would have probably stopped that shooter, but an armed citizen certainly did. House File 2502 is about freedom and liberty. It is also about the health and safety of our children and our families. It is a bill that addresses the safety and welfare of our citizens by ensuring their right of self-defense against sick individuals that would kill innocent people. It is about my right as a parent to be prepared to defend my wife and my children, my family. It is about everyone in this chamber's right and Iowans across the state's right to carry a firearm, if they so choose, to defend what they love without facing a labyrinth of different ordinances and mandates as they move about our state. Second Amendment rights are sacred. We must continue to ensure the right to keep and bear arms is consistently protected throughout the state by regulating Second Amendment issues on the state level. House File 2502 is an important step in ensuring that consistency of protection for Second Amendment rights. Mr. Speaker, for freedom, I move House File 2502.
The gentleman from Crawford, Representative Holt, moves Bill read for the last time and placed on its passage. Are there objections? Seeing none, the clerk will read.
House File 2502, a bill for an act relating to firearms and weapons, including the storage, carrying, possession, or transportation of the weapon, and the establishment, use, and maintenance of shooting ranges, be it enacted by a General Assembly of the State of Iowa.
Question now is, shall the bill pass? Those in favor of its passage shall vote aye. Those opposed shall vote no. The clerk will open the machine and receive your vote. Height votes aye. Bossman votes aye. Zumbaugh votes aye. Have you all now voted? The clerk will close the machine and record your vote. The House will pay attention to the results of the vote. Those voting aye, 52. Those voting no, 44. Absent or not voting, 4. The bill, having received a constitutional majority, is declared to have passed the House. Are there objections to the title? Chair hears none, and the title is agreed to. The chair recognizes the gentleman from Cedar, Representative Kaufman, for opening comments on House File 2477.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Good afternoon, Mr. Speaker, ladies and gentlemen of the House. House File 2477 is a bill regarding agricultural experiences. This bill defines agricultural experiences and prohibits counties from establishing a conditional use, special use permit, or special exception. Where this comes from is recently the Johnson County Board of Supervisors has adopted a unified development ordinance. And in that infinite wisdom, they have made the following situation illegal. So if I'm a vegetable farmer and I choose to want to have my customers who I deliver vegetables to every single week, and I want to have them over to have them experience the farm. I want to have them over to be able to see where their food grows. I want to have them over for a potluck. That's now illegal. Not only is it illegal, but to do so, you have to ask the government permission. Oh, and by the way, they can tell you no. Oh, and by the way, it's a $250 fee for each time you want to do this. So this bill will define agricultural experiences and prohibit those unfortunate barriers. That concludes my opening comments.
Is there a discussion? Chair recognizes the lady from Johnson, Representative Masher.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I rise in support of House File 2477. Across this state, we have many different kinds of farmers. Along with our traditional corn and soybeans, we have farmers who produce fruits, vegetables, eggs, honey, turkey, pork, beef, chicken, fish, and even turtles. Many of these farmers own CSAs and have customers who appreciate the quality of what they produce. These farmers help educate the public by inviting them to their farms to teach about how their food is grown. These educational opportunities should be encouraged and supported by us all. The public needs to know where their food comes from. Children need to know where their food comes from. Carrots and onions, potatoes do not magically appear on the grocery shelves. It takes a lot of work, a lot of hard work. These small farmers are devoted to the land and the crops they produce. They appreciate the opportunity to host events at their farm where they can showcase their heirloom tomatoes, their hoop houses, and their irrigation systems. Any of you in this room who have ever had a small garden know how labor-intensive it is. These farmers work tirelessly to grow their crops and bring them to families across this state through farmers markets and their own CSAs. By supporting this bill, we are protecting our small farmers and helping them educate the public about how food production works. The bill bans any county from requiring a conditional use permit, special use permit, special exception, or a variance for the ag experience on a property where the primary use is ag production. While I'm usually an advocate for local control, in this case I am supporting the small farmers because large farmers do not have to apply for these permits or pay the $250 permitting fee for an event. I see this as a fairness issue. It makes no sense to require these permits and fees for one group of farmers while another group is exempt. I support our farmers, both large and small. A number of years ago, Iowa football coach Hayden Fry had an ANF logo placed on all of the football uniforms of all Iowa players. That ANF logo stood for America Needs Farmers. I believe that logo. My ancestors who came from Europe farmed in southern Bavaria in Germany. My father was a farmer, his father was a farmer, and his father's father was a farmer too. My brother still farms that land today, and our farm is a century farm and soon will be added to the list of heritage farms. Yes, America needs farmers, but more importantly, Iowa depends on them. I ask your support for this bill.
Seeing no further discussion, Chair recognizes Representative Kaufman for closing remarks on House File 2477.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Representative Masher, I appreciate your words on this bill, as well as your support. In closing, I just want to acknowledge two of my constituents who are in the gallery, who are here today to watch this bill's pass. Kate and Carmen are up here. They are living proof that two constituents can show up at a town hall, talk about a problem, and then exact change. As I believe this bill will pass here in a couple of minutes, it's my understanding the Senate will pass this early next week, and I'm very confident the governor will give it a fair hearing. So you two are living proof of how democracy can work here in Iowa. Mr. Speaker, I move House File 2477.
The gentleman from Cedar removes the bill to be read for the last time placed on its passage. Are there objections? Seeing none, the clerk will read.
House File 2477, a bill for an act relating to county regulations of certain agricultural experiences being enacted by the General Assembly of the State of Iowa.
The question now is, shall the bill pass? Those in favor of passage shall vote aye. Those opposed shall vote no. The clerk will receive your vote. Maxwell, aye. Seek, aye. Hagenau, aye. Bossman, aye. Holt, aye. Have you all now voted? The clerk will close the machine and record your vote. The House will pay attention to the results of the vote. Those voting aye, 85. Those voting no, 11. Not voting or absent, 4. The bill, having received a constitutional majority, is declared to have passed the House. Are there objections to its title? The chair hears none. The title is agreed to. The chair recognizes the gentleman from Cedar for opening remarks on House File 2512.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Good afternoon again, ladies and gentlemen of the House. Both of these bills, the one that I'm about to speak on and the bill that we just passed, are the result of one problem in one county currently. But many counties do the same thing, and this problem has the potential to pop up in many other counties. So I want to tell a quick story about how the ordinance process took place in Johnson County, a county that I'm proud to represent. When I first were having conversations with people about the initial proposal was illegal. State law is clear. You don't get to make a county law stronger than the state when it comes to livestock production. You may not like that law, and that's a whole different debate, but that doesn't mean you get to make changes that are contrary to state law. The initial ordinance would have said that if you live in rural Johnson County and choose to have 20 sheep, and it gets cold, and those sheep want to go into the barn together, you're a factory farm. It was truly one of the most radical pieces of policy that I've ever seen. Now, thankfully, the ordinance was brought back. I'm sure Representative Masher will talk about how all 13 of the requests of farmers were adopted. But taking a proposal that's this bad and scaling it back down to this bad isn't cause for a gold star. And so that's why we're here today. Because farmers in Johnson County truly feel that they're under attack. So what this bill does, it prohibits a county from requiring an application or charging a fee. Again, you don't get to have to force somebody to ask permission to farm on your own land. It requires county boards to follow the same procedures for the adoption of an amendment, to a comprehensive plan as you would to adopt the comprehensive plan. What that means is you can't just present a proposal which involves public input and then propose an amendment that could possibly drastically change it without, again, having public input. And then finally, the bill changes the makeup of the Zoning Commission so that its members exclusively have to be comprised of those that live in the unincorporated areas who are affected by said proposal. You're probably going to hear about how this is an invasion of local control. It's not. That's not even a debatable point. Because state law is clear. You don't get to do this. You may disagree with the state law, but you don't get to do this. And then finally, I think the good comparison on why a rural zoning commission should be comprised of members that are affected. Because if you have a look at a city council cannot be represented by somebody from the rural areas. It can only be represented by someone from that urban setting. So I think this policy makes good sense. That concludes my opening comments.
Is there discussion? The chair recognizes the lady from Johnson, Representative Masher.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Representative Kaufman, I too am proud to represent the people of Johnson County. I rise in opposition to House File 2512. According to Iowa Code Chapter 335, county governments are prohibited from passing any ordinances that regulate farms or farm buildings. The Johnson County supervisors have been working on this land use plan, they call it the UDO, for the last 2 years. The Planning and Zoning Commission, and a number of those folks are farmers, have also been working, and they've been involved in the development of those plans. So after numerous meetings, work sessions, informational meetings in the rural areas, and public hearings, they adopted a plan and recommended 13 amendments to the original plan that came from Planning and Zoning. So Representative Kaufman, I attended those meetings. I sat there and I listened to the farmers and I talked to them before and after, and I also talked with our supervisors. So the rural residents definitely had a say. They were given a chance to voice their concerns, and the Planning and Zoning Commission made changes to the plan after listening to those concerns. The P&Z then passed those recommendations on to the Board of Supervisors, and the supervisor reviewed the recommendations, conducted additional public hearings, and then adopted all 13 to the original land use plan. 13 amendments. While the farmers in our county still had some concerns, and I'll admit that, about the final plan that was adopted, they were appreciative of the opportunity to weigh in on the plan, the hearings that were held in the rural areas, because they couldn't always go. They were in the fields during some of the public hearings, so they had additional ones at times the farmers could attend. They also appreciated the willingness of the supervisors to hear them out and listen to their concerns, and the fact that they adopted those 13 amendments reflected that they were heard. Yesterday, I received a letter from Mark Ogden, and I think I shared a copy with you as well, our local Farm Bureau president. The letter was addressed to our Planning and Zoning Commission, and it addressed the concerns he has representing his farm community concerning the ordinance that was recently passed. In talking to our local supervisors, they shared that they have scheduled meetings with Mark and are trying to resolve these issues at the local level. It is my hope that we would take no action on this bill today and allow the current process to work. Now, you may all be thinking, well, this is pretty simple, it's clear. The supervisors cannot regulate farmland, right? This is the problem. It is not clear. We've had numerous situations, some in Henry County, Representative Mitchell, I'll share with you later that one, where individuals who are not farmers are taking advantage of the farm zoning laws. They may have a few head of cattle or sheep or say, for zoning purposes, they are a farmer. Some of you farmers in this room may have seen that kind of situation in your own county, maybe right next to you. It is blatantly unfair for a person living in a rural area to take advantage of the zoning laws protecting farmers when they are not legitimate farmers. And I think everyone in here would agree with that. Our Planning and Zoning Commission and the supervisors struggled with this, and they tried to come up with a plan that would meet the needs of legitimate farmers and hold those who are not accountable. Representative Kaufman, would you yield?
Will the gentleman yield?
Yes.
Representative, you are in order.
Thank you. So is there anything in this bill that addresses the bad actors, and how do we get to that?
Representative Masher, there is nothing in this bill that addresses the bad actors, because that's not the problem that I'm looking to address in this bill. I agree with you that a problem exists, but the old adage of you're taking a chainsaw instead of a scalpel, this is like taking an errant firing grenade launcher instead of a scalpel. The unintended consequences of those that are harmed by a goal that you and I share as a problem are far too big of a price to pay.
So this is the thing. Mark Ogden is willing to work with our Planning and Zoning Commission and the supervisors to try to figure that out. I say let them. Let them do it at the local level. Were you aware that Mark had a meeting with our local supervisors and is intending to continue to work on this?
I'm very well aware.
Okay. Is there a real reason that you're unwilling to let that process work?
It's an illegal process, Representative. You don't have a right to regulate livestock at a law that is stronger. Just because you bring a proposal that's really bad and bring it back down to only kind of bad doesn't mean a pat on the back is earned.
That is not what the farmers in our area were saying. I don't know what they were saying to you, but that is not what we were hearing. And again, it doesn't address the problem that we've all agreed is a problem of people claiming they are farmers when they are not. Most counties, thank you, Representative Kaufman, most counties in this state have UDOs. They have a Unified Development Ordinance. And the reason they have them is to protect the farmers in this state and the farmers in this room. And this is why. They don't want spot developments to occur, urban sprawl, taking farmland, good farmland, that has great ratings for corn and soybeans, out of production. That's why they regulate in the rural areas, to make sure that we are keeping that farmland in farmland. Many of the farmers in this room know how it drives up the cost, the price of farmlands when you have developments that occur and it make it very, almost impossible for a farmer to buy that land. So I'll be voting no on this bill today. Let the process work. Do not strip local control from county officials. They know their counties and they're the best ones to make those local decisions. For this reason, I ask the body to vote no on House File 2512. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Seeing no further discussion, the chair recognizes Representative Kaufman for closing remarks on House File 2512.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Representative Masher, I would have continued to yield. And the answer to your question about why I wouldn't let the process continue, this is almost like having Stockholm Syndrome. The farmers are grateful that they get an opportunity to negotiate because they don't have a choice. There's nobody back home that is willing to go all the way when it comes to making what is right, right. I'll say it for a third time. Taking something that's really bad and scaling it back to bad, and then now after this next meeting and making it kind of bad, still is not a good thing. I have no idea which farmers you're talking to, because I have talked to hundreds in Johnson County. This ordinance, I am very confident that if I did some polling, that Fidel Castro would be more popular than this ordinance in rural Johnson County. The farmers are scared. They truly believe that their livelihood is under attack and that nobody wants to listen to them. I resoundingly reject the argument that this is taking away local control. There was never anything that they were legally allowed to take, but they did it anyway. I will repeat again, this ordinance is illegal. It's contrary to state law. Yes, Representative, the farmers had a say. They're being allowed to have a say in how much can be illegally taken from them. So in closing, Mr. Speaker, ladies and gentlemen of the House, there are a lot of people back home listening to this debate, thankful that the state has their back. And in closing, I just want to send a message to two of the Johnson County supervisors who were on the record as being rabidly anti-agriculture, and that is leave our farmers the hell alone. I move House File 2512.
The gentleman from Cedar moves the bill be read for last time, placed on its passage. Are there objections? Seeing none, the chair will read.
House File 2512, a bill for an act relating to the county's own procedures and including effective date and applicability provisions be enacted by the General Assembly of the State of Iowa.
The question now is, shall the bill pass? Those in favor shall vote aye. Those opposed shall vote no. The clerk will receive your vote. Seek votes aye. Breckinridge, aye. Hegano, aye. Bossman, aye. Mitchell, aye. Bennett, no. Have you all now voted? The clerk will close the machine and record your vote. The House will pay attention to the results of the vote. Those voting aye, 66. Those voting no, 29. Absent or not voting, 5. The bill having received a constitutional majority is declared to have passed the House. Are there objections to the title? Hearing none, the title is agreed to. Introduction of bills.
House File 2586 by Committee on State Government, a bill for an act relating to the gambling regulations and enforcement activities of the Division of Criminal Investigation and the Department of Public Safety.
The first reading of the bill is now ready for commitment or amendment and referred to Ways and Means.
House File 2587 by Committee on State Government, a bill for an act relating to the voting and administration of elections and including effective date provisions.
First reading of the bill is now ready for commitment or amendment and placed on the calendar.
House File 2588 by Committee on State Government, a bill for an act establishing the minimum age relative to various activities relating to tobacco, tobacco products, alternative nicotine products, vapor products, and cigarettes, and making penalties applicable and including effective date provision.
First reading of the bill is now ready for commitment or amendment and placed on calendar.
House File 2589 by Committee on Public Safety, a bill for an act concerning Medical Cannabidiol Act.
First reading of the bill is now ready for commitment or amendment and placed on the calendar.
House File 2590 by Committee on Public Safety, a bill for an act allowing certain medical, emergency medical care providers to obtain professional permit to carry weapons.
First reading of the bill is now ready for commitment or amendment and placed on the calendar. Chair recognizes the gentleman from Harrison, Representative Winchettle.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Good afternoon, Mr. Speaker. Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen of the House. Mr. Speaker, I ask for unanimous consent to immediately message House File 2502, 2477, and 2512 to the Senate.
Are there objections? The chair hears none, so ordered. Chair recognizes the gentleman from Harrison, Representative Winchettle.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, if there's no further business to come before the House, I move the House adjourn until Monday, March 2nd at 1 p.m.
Is there any other business to come before the House? Seeing no further business, you've heard the motion by the gentleman from Harrison, Representative Winchell. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say no.
No.
The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. The House is adjourned.